Hey, this is Kurt Kovac from Politics NC. We've got a brief interview here with Professor Michael Bitzer of Catawba College in Salisbury. Wanted to go ahead and apologize ahead of time. The audio quality is not great. We got some new equipment that we are learning to use on a day-to-day basis, so hopefully this introduction is indicative of future quality and not current quality. Thanks.
I'm Kurt Kovac. I'm here with Politics NC. We're in Salisbury, North Carolina, with Professor Michael Bitzer. And we just wanted to briefly kind of unpack what's happening in the 9th Congressional District. So just in a nutshell, because it's a lot, could you sort of lay out what's going on out there?
Well, we're basically talking about the most competitive congressional election in the state turning into the most contested congressional outcome. We're looking at over 280,000 votes cast, a margin of victory of 905 for Republican Mark Harris over Democratic candidate Dan McCready. And there are some real issues coming out of the 9th Congressional District, particularly right now from Bladen County, but also potentially Robeson. There could be some other spillover effects out of other counties about absentee by mail votes, and questions about return rates, questions about whether voters had their ballots manipulated by harvesters, collectors, however you want to describe them. And it has turned into a real question about, I would say, the integrity of, can we be assured that these results are truly reflective? And we're not necessarily talking about voter fraud, but I think we're talking about election fraud, and we can talk a little more about the difference between the two.
So, and what you pointed out is the crux of all this, the absentee ballots. That's at question. So I know you've done extensive analysis on your blog about this, but could you sort of describe what's weird about Bladen and maybe to some degree Robeson County?
Yeah. So we've got two major opportunities for absentee voting. One is in person, and the vast majority of people tend to take that route. They tend to show up, cast their ballot, leave early before election day. Usually anywhere from 2 to 4% of an electorate will be absentee by mail. And certainly campaigns use that as a mechanism to at least get people aware of the election, go ahead and make a request for an absentee ballot by mail. And then if you find yourself unable to show up in person, you can still cast a ballot. What we typically tend to see statewide, and in 2018, about 16% statewide of people who requested absentee by mail ballots did not return one for whatever reason. Could be got busy, got shoved into the desk, misplaced it, whatever. But in the 9th Congressional District, that non-return rate was 24%. So that was higher than the state. That was actually the highest congressional district non-return rate. Then you dive into the counties. Robeson had a 62% non-return rate, and Bladen had a 40% non-return rate. And so either people were just doing mass requests of absentee by mail ballots and just not returning them. Maybe that's what's happened. It could be some other factor, but those were just too significant in terms of the anomalies. Now, what ultimately happened is in 7 out of the 8 counties, Dan McCready won the absentee by mail ballots. He won those if you just kind of peel those out.
That was rather significant.
It was pretty significant because traditionally Republicans tend to do very well. They have a strategy. They have reliable voters who do that. So in most elections, Republicans dominate with absentee by mail. Democrats tend to dominate with absentee in person, one stop. But in this, in the 9th, 7 counties went for Dan McCready by absentee by mail, except for one, and that was Bladen. And Mark Harris got 61% of the vote of absentee by mail ballots in Bladen. I then dug a little deeper to see, well, who were these voters casting ballots for this method? And in the ninth, in that county, 19% of the voters were registered Republicans. So you get a final result of 61% Republican, but only 19% of that electorate was registered Republican. Yeah, they're going to vote for their candidate, but that means that's another 40 points to get to a level of how Mark Harris performed.
Right, that's like every unaffiliated voter.
That's every unaffiliated. 38% were unaffiliated. That meant every one of those unaffiliated voters voted Republican. Plus you got 3, 4% Democrats crossing over and voting. That could happen. Right. It's a rural county. But that's just, that was the big signal to me that something's up here.
Right. Well, and there's something I've seen pointed out by more national observers that North Carolina is very good for transparency in the way the election results
remarkably
are presented.
Remarkably so, yes.
And they said it would be a concern in other states, maybe like in Alabama or Georgia,
nope.
that it's this could be happening elsewhere, and it's you just wouldn't know because we don't have as good data that
right.
we have in North Carolina.
Right. The State Board of Elections and the County Board of Elections, let me just say, they do phenomenal jobs with what they have to work with, and you want sunshine in this most core component of a democratic republic. Voting is the essential cornerstone of our system, and having that kind of transparency really gives an assuredness, I think, to
right.
the electoral system.
And so when you dug into those results about the percentages of which party returned,
mm-hmm.
I know you also tackled a little bit of how different races
yep.
return the results. And I think I remember seeing that those were sort of off a bit as well.
They were, particularly in comparison to both the district as a whole for Bladen County and Robeson County, as well as for the state. Now, white voters tended to have a slightly higher accepted return rate, meaning that, okay, you fill out an absentee by mail ballot, but you have to do certain things to make sure that that ballot is guaranteed, and then the board will review it and then decide to accept it or not. And so whites had typically a higher accepted rates. Blacks and particularly Native Americans tended to have a higher non-return rate. That may be just the fact of we're doing a mass campaign on the ground,
right.
request your ballot, but folks just choose not to.
Right. Well, and that's another, when there is so much focus on a specific race like this, it bears digging into every single
yep. Yep.
possible facet of it. Well, you said something there about some of the hoops you have to jump through to return an absentee ballot, and I think WSOC reported how I think some of the people involved in this alleged fraud,
mm-hmm.
there were a few people who had been the signatures for tons of ballots. So you have like
yeah.
one person signing 50
yeah.
ballots. That doesn't happen. I mean,
that doesn't happen without concerted effort,
right.
shall we say.
Yeah.
This is not coincidence. And several of those same names as witness one and witness two were on many of the ballots.
Right.
So that obviously sends a signal that something was going on with this small group of individuals helping voters to get their ballots prepared for delivery or perhaps aiding in the supposed return of those ballots. And that's another question that's out there.
Well, that's something you had said in one of your blog posts. You lay out a couple different, like, it could be this innocuous
mm-hmm.
reason,
yep.
maybe this innocuous reason. But after you have a couple coincidences like that, it's like, okay, if it smells fishy, it's probably fishy.
If there's a pattern that
right.
emerges, and I'm a political scientist,
right,
I'm a
right.
historian, I look for patterns
right.
in numbers. Coincidence can happen. But when it's repeated,
it's a lot of coincidences.
There's a lot
yeah.
of coincidences turning into patterns. Yeah.
So one contentious point of all this, and this is where people sort of slip into the partisan sides of the argument.
Sure.
I know Dallas Woodhouse has made a point of saying even if there's fraudulent votes, there aren't enough to flip this election. And someone has pointed out, it might have been you as well, well, that's not necessarily true. So part of this is, yes, maybe there was a concerted effort to send in ballots for Mark Harris, but all of these ballots that weren't returned, some of those could have been votes for Dan McCready, right?
Mm-hmm.
So the absolute number that weren't returned, even though a lot of those might have been people, like you said, just forgot, got busy.
Right.
There's enough there in theory, right, to
yes.
flip this. It was 905, 906?
905
okay.
is the margin of victory that Harris has over McCready right now. And there are substantial numbers of ballots that we can't attest for right now in terms of where they are. The other question that I have is, can we attest to the validity of the ballots that were returned?
Right.
And I'll give you an example. In one of the affidavits that was filed by one of six voters, she noted that she had, I believe, voted for sheriff and for, I think it was maybe a board of education candidate, and had left the rest of the ballot blank. And she had someone approach her to say, I can take your ballot and return it to the county. And she was like, well, I haven't finished it, you know, filling it out. I don't know about these other offices. And the response was, we can take care of that.
We'll fill it out for you.
We'll fill it out for you. Well, if the ninth congressional spot on the ballot was left blank, did it magically get filled out by somebody other than the voter? If some ballots were collected but not secured in an envelope, could that envelope have been opened and the ballot spoiled? I just don't think we know enough
right.
within what we've got in terms of returned and accepted ballots to say with absolute assurity that there isn't something wrong. And what I would point to in the general statutes is the fourth criteria of saying, what does taint mean? Because if there's enough irregularities or improprieties that taint the potential result of an election, then the board has the discretionary authority to say, we need a new election. Now, it's going to be up to five members to determine what the definition of taint is. And that's the power that the legislature gave to the State Board of Elections.
Right. And when you say, just to clarify, you mentioned the possibility someone might have spoiled
yep.
a ballot. That's like if somebody might have voted for McCready, but
right.
it wasn't sealed, they could have gone in and voted for Harris.
And voted for Harris.
Thrown out.
And it gets automatically kicked out. Yep.
Okay. The statute says irregularities or improprieties occurred to such an extent that they taint the results of the entire election and cast doubt on its fairness. I would say for a lot of people, there is plenty of doubt cast, but as you say, it's up to five of the nine
yep.
to decide if it merits a new election, right?
Correct.
So if the state board calls for a new election, it's just the general, right? It's just Harris, McCready, and the Libertarian?
And the Libertarian. At this point, that's what we understand. Part of the question is, how far back is this investigation going?
Right.
And I have gotten a sense that perhaps they are looking at the primary. The primary election has been certified, though. That means that it has been officially stated. I don't know if that can necessarily be reviewed at this point. And so the likelihood is it's just going to be the general election with those three candidates back on the ballot.
So with the provision in the Constitution that would allow the Congress to
mm-hmm.
make the rules for
the
House
elections
members,
clause, yeah.
right? So at what point would, I suppose after January 3rd, the new Congress convenes,
correct?
But do they have the ability to overrule whatever the state board wants to do? Is it at that point, does the Congress just do whatever they want?
It's not so much overruling what the State Board of Elections decides to do. It's choosing who they will decide to seat in that particular district. And it's very clear that the House and the Senate are governed by their own procedural aspects when it comes to letting a member or a member-elect be sworn in and assume office. That is purely a discretionary authority of the two chambers, And really, there's nothing that the state of North Carolina can do other than present their candidates, their members elect, and say, we certify these individuals to be the winners of these district elections.
Okay, so in that case, I might have missed what you said. If the state board did decide to certify these results, mm-hmm. the Congress will seat Harris regardless, or could they step in and say, we don't like what you've
done? The House could make a decision as to whether to seat Harris if he is certified, or choose through the House Administration Committee to do their own investigation and perhaps decide not to seat Harris. That is within the power of the U.S. House of Representatives alone.
Okay. With that fourth clause in the statutes for the state board, I don't mean to pick on him, but Dallas Woodhouse had said that was obscure or not ever really used, but that doesn't really make a difference as far as, I mean, this is unprecedented pretty much, at least.
We are in totally unprecedented waters. I mean, maybe we should have started with that statement to begin with, because there is nothing in North Carolina history, at least in modern North Carolina history, to really make a comparable case to what we're seeing here. In the general statute, there is no prioritization of those four criteria. So, you know, when I study legislation and I study statutes and I look at the plain text and try to understand the meaning of what words are used for, I look for certain key indicators. And it is one of four. It's the fourth one. But there is nothing in the statute previous to that to say, in descending order, these will be the priorities by which you will take it. So you could choose number one. You could skip number one and go to number two. You could skip the top three and go to number four, if you so desire. Because each one of them has a different conditional and qualification associated with it that could work by itself or in conjunction with others.
Well, that makes sense that you would have four because not every instance might.
Because you can't plan. I mean, when you write a piece of legislation, conceivably, you can't think of every kind of situation that's going to present itself. And that's oftentimes why legislatures will give discretion to bureaucratic agencies and to boards and commissions to say, you know what, you're the expert in this particular field. We're going to trust your judgment, and we're going to give you the discretionary authority to make that decision, and we just give you kind of the power to do so.
Right. Well, I'm sure by the time anybody hears this, there will be more breaking news.
Of course.
We discussed before we started recording, you had some news broken to you before you even seen it regarding this. But if you were a betting man, do you have any sort of thoughts in your own mind about where this might end up, if it's going to be something certified by the board, or if it goes to the Congress, or is it just up in the air?
I have to think it's up in the air right now, because, and I hate to equivocate, but there are so many moving parts. You've got the 9th Congressional District, and is it just one county? Is it two counties? Could it be broader?
Right.
Could potentially be broader. Layer on top of that, the State Board of Elections and their administrative and organizational capability. They've got a stay of life for the current makeup of the board. But then we're talking about a potential new board, or a board that reverts back to the previous 5-member, 3 from the governor's party, 2 from the opposition party. What happens then? What happens with the evidentiary hearing that's slated to take place before December 21st? What happens with the U.S. House of Representatives? There are so many gears that could click together or could come completely wildly apart, and we just have no idea. And, let's say also the legislature's in session right now.
Right.
There's that possibility. So my crystal ball got cracked in 2016. This is too many moving chess pieces for me to figure out what level we're on.
Well, I'm sure everybody else agrees with me trying to keep up with this. But thank you, Professor Bitzer, for talking to me here briefly. And your website is
oldnorthstatepolitics.com.
I didn't want to say that wrong. leave that to you.
That's quite all right.
Well, thank you so much again, and talk to you soon.
It's my pleasure. Thank you.